This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 13th of July 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 13th of July, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: In a Flap Over Egg Farm, Public Feedback Over Station Approach Plans, and Air Quality Plans in the Pipeline. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is In a Flap Over Egg Farm. More than 150 people have objected to plans that could see a large egg production unit housing thousands of chickens near Winchester. The proposals on Vale Farm in Sarum Road have proved to be highly controversial with residents, who have now formed an action group in a bid to stop the scheme. However, the applicant says he has answered their questions and is urging them to stick to the facts when it comes to objecting. Submitted by Sam Burge, who runs the farm that has been in his family for three generations, the unit would be 140 metres long, more than four-fifths the length of Winchester Cathedral, and would house 32,000 free-range hens. The plans come around 12 months after the farm's six-year pig-rearing operation ceased, and it is hoped the egg production business would replace that lost income, according to the proposals. If approved, work would be carried out at the site on a daily basis, with plans in place to stop smells and noise affecting residents. Mr. Burge also said the site would be largely self-sufficient, with power being generated by solar panels and chicken feed grown on the farm. However, furious residents have banded together to stop the development forming. The Crabwood Action Group, CAG, which is urging others to object to the scheme. Objections registered so far include fears over what the impact will be on the nearby Crabwood, a site of specific scientific interest, SSSI. The scale of the plans, the impact of lorry movements on nearby roads, and animal welfare concerns. As well as residents, concerns have been raised by the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, HIOWWT, the Campaign to Protect Rural England, CPRE, and Natural England. A CPRE spokesman wrote to planners, "We support the well-being of the rural economy, and especially farming, on which, in large part, we rely for the maintenance of our fine landscapes. However, new agricultural buildings have clear potential to cause serious harm to the landscape, and so very careful scrutiny of their landscape impact. We consider the proposed building will not protect and enhance the natural beauty of the local landscape, or the cultural asset, which is Clarendon Way." Lynn Gibson of CAG added, "To our mind, this is not merely a diversification of farming to replace lost income from pig farming, but a hugely and solely commercial enterprise on a totally different scale, with little real thought or heed given to the impact on the landscape and residential or public amenity within the local community." He also, in response, Mr. Burge said that he had met campaigners on several occasions, answering their questions and inviting them on site visits. He also stressed that the new facility would not be a chicken factory, and that high welfare standards would be maintained, part of the reason why the site was chosen. Mr. Burge added that concerns over smell and noise had been answered by the facts in the planning application, saying that residents would not be affected and that the egg production facility would result in around half of the lorry movements seen when the pig rearing business was ongoing. Issues over the visual impact were addressed, with Mr. Burge saying 1,200 trees will be planted to screen the building and that views from the Clarendon Way would be minimal. It is thought that the plans will go before a committee of Winchester City Councillors later in the year.
Public feedback over station approach plans. Residents have shown their support for plans to regenerate part of Winchester, but still have concerns, a report has revealed. It comes as the City Council published the findings from the consultation over the station approach scheme. Following public drop-in events in March, the Council has analysed hundreds of comments which show support for the emerging designs. However, concerns were expressed about building heights and the routing of pedestrian walkways into the city centre. A range of potential issues relating to traffic was also raised, including the circulation of buses around Carfax site and the concerns about air quality. Comments concerning parking were almost equally split between those who believed that there was too much and those who felt there was too little. The master plan for station approach is now entering its next design phase, which will see the focus shifting onto more detailed plans for an extended public forecourt in the front of the railway station and designs for high-quality office buildings on the Carfax site. The cattle market development plans will then progress in a later phase. Councillor Steve Miller, portfolio holder for the station approach project, said, "This cabinet takes engagement and consultation on the proposed development of the station approach very seriously, and I am pleased that so many people took the time to give us their views. This will really help us to understand people's thoughts and concerns. Feedback is always invaluable to us, and we will continue to consult with local people and interest groups as we move to the next more detailed phase of design." The council is due to hold a second round of public drop-in events in October, with dates and venues yet to be confirmed. A further update on the scheme, including a bid for £5 million in funding, is expected this afternoon when the Station Approach Committee meets at 4 p.m. The first scheme collapsed in 2016 over widespread concerns it was too large.
Air quality plans in the pipeline. Civic chiefs have heard the latest on the state of plans to make residents in Winchester breathe easier. The Air Quality Action Plan, which will go before Cabinet in September, aims to improve the air quality in Winchester with a raft of measures. David Ingram, Head of Environmental Health, who made a presentation to city councillors, said measures that had been introduced thus far had been successful, with higher parking charges in the city centre leading to more people using the park and ride and car parks on the outskirts. Meanwhile, restrictions placed on delivery vehicles in the city centre has led to a slight reduction in congestion at peak times on the one-way system. However, Mr. Ingram admitted that there were still issues with congestion on St. George's Street, and more needed to be done to crack down on private bin contractors parking and causing tailbacks. Proposals for a new park and ride in the north of Winchester are also part of the County Council strategy and is currently in the second phase of consultation. A site at King's Barton, also previously known as Barton Farm, has been identified. The current plan also includes proposals that would see diesel vehicles charged more to park in the city centre in a bid to persuade them from coming into the city centre. Mr. Ingram said that the council was looking into technology which could identify vehicles in council car parks and programme machines to provide tariffs based on vehicle type. He said that this technology could also be used to provide discounts for smaller, less polluting vehicles, to provide both a carrot and a stick. The plans could also see a clean air zone created in Winchester, limiting or banning HGVs and diesel buses coming into the city. Mr. Ingram said that they would be looking very closely at the work currently being done in Southampton.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements. And Christian comment, letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment and first person. And then we'll do the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements this week. Bogan, K. Eleanor Jean Bogan, who died suddenly on the 4th of July, aged 59. Buscombe, Robert Buscombe died suddenly on the 22nd of June, aged 61. Della Garner, Gillian Leslie Della Garner, who's died aged 68. Howland, Rosemary Howland, died peacefully at Headbourne Worthy on the 9th of July. Lancaster, June Lancaster, died at Berwick Court Care Home, aged 92. Massey, John Royds Massey, who died peacefully at home, aged 93. Nicholson, Edna Nicholson, née Chaffee, who died suddenly at her home in Cornwall, aged 81. Spencer, Patricia Spencer, died peacefully at home on the 7th of July. And Watson, Gerald Henry Watson of Compton, who died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 77. And now we're going to have a Christian comment, please, Paul.
This is by Liz Tatham and is entitled Thinking of Those Upon the Sea. The sea is on my mind at the moment for several reasons. For many churchgoers, it was Sea Sunday last weekend, so our thoughts were turned to those who work at sea and the great difficulties that can be experienced with long separation from families, piracy, withholding of wages, or abandonment in foreign ports. These are just a few of the many privations listed in an appeal by a chaplain to one of the charities which helps those who rely on the sea for a living. These people can be undervalued and uncared for in more frightening ways than I had thought of. Then we all know about the refugees' plight at sea. The sea also came to mind because I heard a story on the radio about a Cornish fisherman who was prevented by the weather from launching his boat for some weeks and felt ashamed to visit the local food bank after he hadn't eaten for several days. He had spent his small amount of savings and had run out of everything, even electricity. If I had known him and lived near him, I would have helped him, as I'm sure many of you would. But I don't know him, so he is out of my mind until someone brings him to my attention and I can open my purse at a collection. I've been searching the internet and discovered that the oceans cover 70% of our planet and hold around 96% of the Earth's water. Given that you are made up of a high percentage of water, and without water this planet couldn't sustain life, I imagine God created the seas with great purposefulness. I've been to the sea recently, had my first swim from a UK beach this year, and walked at sunset, sunrise, all those moving and wonderful moments the shore can offer. I have a friend who swims every day in the sea as part of her way of healing after bereavement. She takes amazing photos of the life under the water. Yet the colourful varieties she captures in images are just a small sample of the huge number of species that scientists have yet to discover. Whenever I visit any small harbour, I imagine the presence Jesus had when he walked through the clatter, noise, busyness, and stopped to call fishermen who responded, dropped their nets, and followed him. He must have been very compelling and even more awe-inspiring when he walked on the Sea of Galilee, slept through a storm, woke, and calmed it. The sea was a significant part of his life. He taught and healed and ministered around its shores. We know we have to take better care of it. Plastics, pollution, and a disregard for its importance as a life force for us. But let's also think about the people who work on it for our benefit, food, transport, leisure, and care for them too, however we can.
Thank you, Paul. And now we've got the letters to the editor, Nikki.
And this one is anonymous. No right of access. Sir, your correspondent, Deirdre Dauncey, drew attention to the fact that her son, a former cathedral chorister, had been prevented from taking his daughter into the vestry to show her his name on the honours board. This was Chronicle Letters, June 28th. Mrs. Dauncey fails to realise that the cathedral is a working building which cannot possibly provide, in quotes, access all areas to its alumni when it suits them, especially in these times of heightened security. Her son may well have provided 5 years of, quotes again, service to the cathedral, but in return he will have received a significant bursary towards his fees at one of the country's top prep schools, which will have set him up for life. I doubt the poor, in quotes again, foreign person who was just doing his job in ensuring the safety of the cathedral staff and visitors will have enjoyed a similar level of privilege. Next time your son wants to visit one of the non-public areas, perhaps he would be better advised to give some advance warning to cathedral staff so that they can accommodate his wishes. Owing to the content of this letter, I would prefer it to be published anonymously if possible. Name and address supplied. Alsford.
Sir, so Jamie Scott has defected back to the Conservatives, Chronicle, July the 5th. Having helped Jamie when he was first got elected, I was aware some people in his ward doubted whether he really was a Conservative. Therefore, I was not totally surprised when he defected to the Lib Dems, although there were rumours at the time he had first applied to join the then Labour group. Whilst I accept that councillors do occasionally change their political allegiance, this is usually done after much soul-searching, not on the spur of the moment, not twice, and not after having been photographed with colleagues about to be stabbed in the back. Jamie is a good local councillor, but not a political animal. Political parties do not fully trust turncoats, and he may well find life on the council now a little less comfortable. He is more of an independent type, but standing as one in Winchester has not been successful in the recent years. Councillor Horrell is obviously pleased with her latest recruit, but she must be wondering whether this is the last of his political about turns. It will be interesting to see whether he defends his seat as a Conservative in 2020, and that's from Andrew Beadle, Miles Down Place, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
The next letter is entitled Topfield Latest and will be particularly of interest to those in Springvale area of Kingsworthy. Sir, those of us living in the Springvale side of Kingsworthy have been invited to a public consultation on the council's proposal to propose plans to work with Drew Smith to build yet more houses on the area known as Topfield. All well and good, but I wonder if the public choose to oppose yet again these plans, whether anyone on the City Council will actually listen. Past experience shows us that they ride roughshod over local opinion. The invitation, right, says, proposals include a number of new houses to meet the community's housing needs. I would like to remind the City Council et al. That the community's housing need here in Kingsworthy has already been met by the recent local housing plan, which the village has followed to the letter. The houses which are proposed for Topfield, or land off Burnett Lane, as which City Council calls it, would be way over and above the needs of the village, which is continuously adding to its housing stock. Note the 50 on Loveden Lane. And by 2030, will have built all it was required to do under the local planning programme two. The new houses which Winchester City Council propose number at least 30 on an area outside the village envelope and will simply add to the burden on an overstretched village infrastructure. The primary school is already full. We have lost our local GP surgery and traffic along Springvale Road and its junctions is already maxed out. Extra building here will increase the risk of flooding in an area which was underwater for weeks in the winter of 2014. It would appear that Winchester City Council has already made their decisions, and this consultation is merely paying lip service to a flawed planning system. Yours faithfully, Karen McCleary, Hook Pit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
Leaving the EU. Sir, this is from Mike Biden. Sir, our MP, Steve Bryan, has promised to uphold the decisions of the British people. In 1975, there was a referendum in which the British people decided to join the Common Market, EEC, by a majority of 2-1. In 1992, when the European Union, EU, was formed, there was no vote. The campaign to have one began then. The people were finally given it in 2016 and voted to leave the EU. As it is perfectly possible to leave the EU whilst remaining in the European Economic Area, EEA, the vote cannot have been a vote to leave today's equivalent of the EEC. Dan Hannan, our Conservative MEP and prominent Leave campaigner, recently expressed surprise that Brexit has not already been finalised on this basis. His view commands wide support, and such a Brexit will reunite most of the nation. It preserves our jobs and security whilst returning control of agriculture and fisheries to the UK. It solves the Irish border issue and reduces the threats to our security and the future of the UK posed by Scottish nationalism. Only a few of the most ardent Brexiteers wish to leave the EEA. As our MP campaigned for Remain, presumably he's not amongst them. Before the government can reverse the settled will of two-thirds majority of the people, there must surely be another vote. I have written to Mr. Bryan asking him to support leaving the EU and the UK staying in the EEA, or to vote for a people's vote on whether to reverse the 1975 referendum result. I wonder if your readers agree. That from Mike Biden, Northbrook Close, St. Giles Hill, Winchester.
And Rupert Pitt writes, Sir Steve Bryan wrote about liveliness of the High Street in his letter from Westminster on June the 14th. There was a discussion of business rates, but too little consideration has been given to the excessive rents asked by landlords. In 2014, Patsy Presto left this notice on the door of its shop in the square. After 2 years of negotiations, we have not been able to obtain a satisfactory lease renewal with our landlords, so have no alternative to closing. The landlord wanted more money than Pesto could afford. The rise in internet shopping has meant that the takings of shops have gone down. Four local shops have closed recently: Earl of Sandwich, Jury Street, Creative Crafts, The Square, Wild Sports, Jury Street, and Justice, Parchment Street. The landlords wanted more money than they could pay, and so the shops with great local value closed. There is no reason for landlords to be greedy when they have so much anyway. There was a bar in Jury Street, Plain and Fancy, which could not afford new rents, and it was unoccupied for 9 months after it closed. When River Island in the Lower High Street closed, it was unoccupied for 11 months before Tesco moved in. I estimate the Jaeger store in St George Street has been empty for 7 months. The landlords are able to let properties lie vacant for so long because they have collected so much rent in the past, they do not need the money, rent, whilst they wait for a new tenant to move in, at a rent which brings them in more money. After the Second World War and the Korean War in 1950-1953, there was an excessive profits tax as a revenue measure and an instrument of curbing excess profits attributable to the war. Such tax ought to be levied on property, stroke landlords, who are making excess profits with a regulator who can inspect the profit margins of the landlord's rent increases and if they are making excess profits. That's from Rupert Pitt, Church Lane, Colden Common.
The next letter is entitled High Street Future and is written by Jane Harding, one of our colleagues. Sir, I've been following the demise of Winchester City Centre with some concern, fearful that we may now also lose our relatively small Marks and Spencer and Debenhams. However, I think the cause is more complex than simply online shopping. Our large Sainsbury's at Badger Farm now sells very attractive household goods, china, sheets, ornaments, etc. Even the clothes can be surprisingly good if you sift through them, and all at reasonable prices. The arrival of Argos on site means that almost all household goods are now available, with free parking a few paces away, particularly helpful when buying a large item. Living south of the city, there is no central car park without driving around the one-way system, adding to the pollution, even the short-term parking in Simmons Street has now gone. Cycle routes are virtually non-existent, as is regularly pointed out. I have great sympathy with the Green Party issues, but notice that many of them, like me, are lucky enough to be able to afford to live within walking or cycling distance of the city centre. Bus fares are very expensive and time-consuming unless you are retired. Perhaps it is time to reconsider lower city centre business rates with cheaper and more extensive parking closer to our shops. If we are fighting to save the city centre as an asset for local people as well as tourists. This might also encourage the individual shops such as the much lamented Creative Crafts, which seem appropriate for a small city of character like Winchester. Jane Harding, Backstreet, St. Cross.
And this from Margaret Mason, headed Clean Up After Dogs on Water Lane. And there's a beautiful photograph, I actually want to go there, of the river flowing gently, ducks, little bridge, the bench, grassy edges, and trees shading the river. Sir, the number of people who bring their dogs along the riverside path in Water Lane to offload the animals' waste matter is amazing. Most owners clear up after the act, but there are those who have no idea of public hygiene at all and repeatedly allow their animals to do their droppings in the same place and do not even attempt to clear it or prevent it happening. The low wall, which was built as a flood barrier, is a great temptation for children to balance on walking in the lane. However, just where they would jump off is a minefield of excrement. Also, it would be nice for residents to sit of a summer evening and chat, but with little heaps of fly attractions on the grass, that is not an option. Just over the bridge, by the side of what was El Sabio Tapas restaurant, is a rough patch of shrub and bushes. Why not show you this to your dogs as a possible toilet area? No one walks or sits there, and the animal can dig over at the doings. There is supposed to be a fine for this lack of care. The officials are missing out on a brilliant way to make money. They wasted thousands sitting in Parliament to make the law, so why not recoup some of it back? There is not even a sign for the ignorant to warn them of this law and inform them how to use a doggy bag. Sorry. Although I do wonder how much methane is created by such collections. I would ask that those who have dogs to take them for a longer walk out in the countryside where there is more space for it, or get the animal to do it in their own garden or adjacent grassy patch. And that's from Margaret Mason of Water Lane, Winchester.
Get it right. Sir, your correspondent last week, C.J. Ashcroft, Chronicle Letters, July the 5th, rightly highlights the issue with a lack of effect consultation with existing River Park Sports Centre users. As a frequent user of the River Park, I have observed that many users have no idea what is proposed, both in the terms of facilities and timescale at Bar End. This is not particularly surprising, as you will not find any information about the Bar End Leisure Park project at River Park. Whilst there were exhibition boards at River Park during the last round of consultation, these are long gone. The consultation reports show that very few members of River Park have been involved. Whether by design or not, the reality is that River Park users are not currently well informed or engaged with this project. If City Council officers were to take a walk over to River Park and ask users, they would discover how poor understanding currently is. From the project reports, it seems that the project is proceeding on the basis of national studies that say, if you build a facility of this type, you can expect a certain number of visitors to turn up. This approach may well work, but surely it makes sense to get good current user engagement to help validate the forecast visitor figures. Current River Park users are potentially going to be the core users of any new sports centre and therefore should be engaged with and have some real influence on the design of the facility, even at this late stage. This is a big project and we need to get it right. And that's from Jeremy Mortimer, Harrowdown, Badger Farm, Winchester.
The next letter is entitled Sun Lane Woes. It's written by a gentleman in Stockbridge, but refers to proposals in Alsford. Sir, I refer to Mr. Cranfield's letter, chronicled June the 28th, who rejoices in the prospect of many houses being built adjacent to Alsford. I wonder if he has thought of where the occupants will work and how they get there. Unless there are immediate plans to build factories or large offices in Alsford, the new people will drive far and wide for work, creating more congestion and pollution. 300 houses will generate 1,200 plus vehicle movements per day. Is the developer or council making adequate road improvements to cater for this flow? One can only assume that the council or developer providing more school places and medical facilities for these new residents. Is Mr. Cranfield aware that developers promise social housing, but then they can and do write to the authorities stating that with this social element, they cannot make the project profitable? This allows them to reduce and perhaps eliminate social housing. I think Mr. Cranfield might be surprised to discover the threshold for social housing. I am told from a reliable source that a household income of below 60 to 80,000 pounds entitles one to social housing. On a national level, we cannot afford to lose farmland to development when we only produce about 35% of our food requirement. Sadly, housing is a political issue. Once a subject becomes political, the truth rushes out of the door faster than the speed of light. Do we need 300,000 houses per annum? There are lies, damned lies, and government statistics, to quote George Bernard Shaw. I'm Robert Marshall, Houghton, Stockbridge.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. And now we move on to historical items. We're going back a couple of hundred years. Nikki.
200 years ago, Tuesday, July the 14th, 1818. The sixth annual meeting for the Hampshire Society for the Education of the Poor, on the plan of the Reverend Dr. Bell, held this day, was numerously and respectfully attended. The children of the Central School heard divine service at the cathedral this morning, when an appropriate sermon was preached by the Reverend T. Rennell, which, at the request of the meeting, was ordered to be printed. A collection amounting to upwards of £70 was made. The public examination of the children at St. John's House was highly approved of. In the absence of the Reverend F. Ironmonger, the report was read by Mr. Clark, which presents a most satisfactory account of the schools established in various parts of this county. Last year, there were 83 schools in union with the Hampshire Society and 5,268 children under instruction. There are now 91 schools and 6,124 children educated in them, making in the whole 8 schools and 856 children more than reported in the last annual meeting. Tables were laid in the cathedral churchyard and the children dined together.
And 100 years ago, Saturday, July the 13th, 1918, Alfred Thomas and Tom Thomas, camp workers, were brought up separately with being drunk and disorderly in Lynx Road on Sunday afternoon. Police Constable Bailey found prisoners on the lawn in front of a house on Week Hill. They were requested to go away and did so, but then in the road they became very violent. They were arrested and the second prisoner broke away. Special Constable Godwin and Special Constable Simpkins assisted in the arrest, and the former had his clothing damaged. Prisoners were also charged with the damage to special constables' clothes, and they were fined £2 each and also a further 10 shillings each in respect of the damage.
50 years ago, Saturday, July the 13th, 1968. Alsford's intrepid traveller, Mr. Geoffrey Hallett of Cardew Cottage, East Street, returned home this week having completed a journey of 4,000 miles, which took him 10 weeks. Starting from Dover on St. George's Day and landing at Ostend, his journey took him through Belgium, Holland, Denmark, Sweden and Norway, 175 miles inside the Arctic Circle. Following a route from Aarhus down the east coast of Jutland to Copenhagen, he crossed into Sweden, going north to Stockholm. From there he took a boat to Finland and on to Helsinki, where he picked up mail from home, arriving within the Arctic Circle on his birthday. He crossed the border into Norway and continued to Hammerfest, the most northerly point of his route, where he got a lift with two old-age pensioners from Yorkshire. This helped him on his journey south to Trondheim, where he took ship along the Norwegian coast to Bergen. Crossing the North Sea, he arrived in Newcastle and, after hitchhiking to London, returned to Alsford by coach. Proposals to develop part of the village of Littleton has run into still more opposition from residents. The Rural District Council held a public meeting in the village on Tuesday evening to gauge the extent of the reaction and to give residents an opportunity to express their views. They more or less unanimously agreed that should plan for 33 houses on an 8-acre site off South Drive be passed, it would mean the end of Littleton as a village. This, they said, would not be the direct result of this plan, but it would open the gates for a flood of other building projects. The meeting was attended by the County Planning Officer, Mr. Smart, who explained that this proposal came at a time when Littleton was being considered for a comprehensive redevelopment programme, which would be shown in a village map expected to come out in the 1970s.
And from 25 years ago, two items from Friday, July the 2nd, 1993. Two nurses have been hit by the salmonella outbreak at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The infection has now spread to another hospital in the city, bringing the total number of victims to 11. A 95-year-old woman is among the latest to suffer from the food poisoning. She was a patient at St Paul's Hospital and had eaten food supplied by RHCH Kitchens. The two nurses had both eaten in the hospital canteen, but they worked on wards that were not affected by the outbreak. Medical experts are still trying to pin down the cause of the infection, which originally affected six patients, but Dr. Matthew Dryden, who's leading the investigation, said it was unlikely the specific cause will be discovered, although they now know it was due to food handling and preparation. And the second item, Winchester's streets should soon be clear of abandoned supermarket trolleys. The City Council and the four supermarkets in the city centre are introducing a locking trolley system and 12 new trolley parks. The trolleys will require a deposit of £1, which will be returned to the customer when the trolley is placed in a trolley park after use. The new system will start on July the 5th in the Gateway, Iceland, Marks and Spencers and Sainsbury's stores. The trolley parks are in Friarsgate, Brooks, Middlebrook Street, St Peter's, Colebrook Street and Chessel car parks. The council's chief engineer, David Marklew, said, "Abandoned trolleys have become a real nuisance in the city. They're left in parking spaces, on pavements and even in roads. Frequently, they're thrown in the river and into flower beds by vandals." So now we move back to the present and we've got Chronicle editorial comment read by Nikki, please.
And this is headed Road to England's World Cup Glory. The most popular man in the country right now is the self-effacing England manager Gareth Southgate. At the time of writing, unheralded, he has led his young team to the semi-finals of the World Cup. The Chronicle went to press before the match against Croatia. With the country riven by Brexit, the football success has brought people together in a positive way that almost nothing else can. We can be united in grief, but few things capture the public imagination in the way that sport, and particularly football, can. The London Olympics of 2012 was glorious, yet our success was in sports that in the main do not usually capture much attention, such as rowing, cycling or athletics. This all-too-rare football success and the resulting national euphoria prompts people who don't like football to feel the need to take to social media to announce their snooty disdain. Sympathy should be the only response for these people who fail to appreciate the subtle beauties of our national game. It is their loss. Winchester has few connection with England and World Cup. Terry Payne, a member of the 1966 World Cup winning squad, was born and raised in the city, Highcliffe, as was 2002 player Wayne Bridge in Stanmore. But perhaps there is one thing the local authorities can do. Rename Southgate Street Gareth Southgate Street.
Thank you, and now we move on to First Person read by Norma. Thank you.
A Summer Worth Waiting For by Ron Allison. The timings have not exactly worked in my favour this week. President Trump does not arrive in this country until later today, and England's semi-final World Cup match was played yesterday, both happening too late for me to be able to pass on my words of wisdom on the two events of considerable importance. Why important? First, the president. Because of the office he holds, what Donald Trump thinks, says and does makes a huge difference to us all. He has power and he has influence, and therein lies a problem. While his office commands our respect, he himself does not. At least not among the millions of Americans who did not vote for him overall, that was a majority, and among many, many millions more elsewhere in the world. But he is in the White House, and he may yet prove we doubters wrong. His off-the-cuff tweet-before-you-think style could be just what is needed at this time. Perhaps. Either way, a strong Anglo-American relationship, special or otherwise, is essential to the well-being of both countries, and so the visit of the president does matter. Simply being rude in one way or another will not really help. Now, why football? You need to ask some 24 million of us that question, but you can be certain that if England did win yesterday in Russia, those of us here at home will be in very good spirits. And if we had been knocked out, well, it was the semi-final, and few would have thought that England could get to that stage. Nor, I'm sure, did some of you who watched last night's game expect to be interested enough to do so. Caught up in the football fever? Never. So there you are. I'm speculating, having been beaten by a deadline. Also, a bit of overwhelmed by these days of wonderful weather. Not that I'm complaining, far from it. I used to have a neighbour who, whenever we had 2 days or more of less continuous sunshine, would mournfully predict, "Oh, we'll pay for this, you'll see." He was then, of course, delighted when, sadly, as often the case, the brief spell of sunshine ended after a couple of days with a tremendous thunderstorm. Not this year, or at least not as I write. And as someone now well into retirement, I can adapt my lifestyle and pace very happily to these conditions. I'm grateful that I am now not required to rush around in the heat. The combination of a World Cup and a wonderful spell of weather bring back memories of both 1966 and 1976. In 66, the then playing Alf Ramsey took full advantage of playing at home, all England matches were on the old Wembley Stadium, to guide his side to victory in the final. Alf, later to become Sir Alf, first came to notice playing for Southampton in the old second division. Capped for England, he moved on to Tottenham Hotspur and then into club management at Ipswich before being appointed the England manager. He was not what you might call a bubbly character, but he had exactly what was wanted at the time. A clear plan of development, huge ambition for his team, not himself, and a fierce determination. In that summer, the right man chose the right players for the right team, and between them they produced the right result. Will history... No, don't go there.
And we know the outcome. OK, so that concludes those items. We've now got what's on, please, and the announcements. And for what's on, we've got a couple of reminders on the concerts. That the Tuesday lunchtime recitals at Romsey Abbey between 1:10 and 1:50 are available every week. They're free with a retiring collection for a varied selection of music. And also on Tuesday lunchtime, Winchester Cathedral has lunchtime recitals. Next week, the 17th of July, it's Irene and George Castle playing the recorder and the piano. The concert starts at 1 p.m. and it's free with a retiring collection. The lighting up time ends on Friday the 13th of July at 5:05 a.m. and begins at 9:16 p.m. Next Wednesday the 18th of May it ends at 5:11 a.m. and begins at 9:11 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we're going to continue with further items of general news.
This item is entitled Chessel Lodge set to open to residents. Winchester's new retirement complex, Chessel Lodge, is finally completed and the Chronicle were invited to have a sneak peek ahead of the first arrival of new residents. The £16 million development, a joint venture between the City Council and Hampshire County Council, features a mixture of one- and two-bedroom apartments designed for the over-55s. The complex is the first extra care development built in Hampshire and allows couples with different care needs to still live together. Other on-site facilities include a salon, gardens, restaurant, which is also open to the public, and a communal roof terrace with some of the best views of the city over the cathedral. A free day centre is also housed on the ground floor for use by Winchester's elderly community and residents. The large space and lounge area will be used for various activities. However, management has said that they want the space to be whatever the residents want. There's also a single guest room on site that residents can rent for £10 to enable family members to stay with them at the lodge. The scheme at Chessel Street is funded by the City Council, Hampshire County Council, Homes England, and a gift from the late Winchester-born resident Harold Harris. The idea behind the project is the concept of extra care, which provides people with their own individual apartment, coupled with access to communal spaces in modern, high-quality, attractive buildings close to local facilities. Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of City Council, said, "We live in a society where people are living longer. We have a duty of care to the older members of society. This development supports older residents by providing them with a high quality of life right in the heart of Winchester. Importantly, this is a top quality building that will benefit present and future generations of Winchester residents. It is also a way to free up larger homes for families by allowing people who need extra help the opportunity of Chessel Lodge. The scheme was not universally welcomed. Many local people object to the loss of parking spaces and to the new building's relative height dominating the street scene, which is mainly two-storied terraced houses. And there are photographs of the communal area in the lodge, one of the outdoor areas, the main entrance to Chessel Lodge, the garden, and of civic chiefs admiring the view over Chessel Street from the roof garden."
Digger used in raid attempt. A business owner has vowed not to let would-be burglars win after tens of thousands of pounds worth of damage was caused to his rural shop. It comes after the Westmeon Hut garage was targeted in the early hours of yesterday, whenever it was, morning, when a digger was used to try to rip out the store's cash point. However, the culprits appear to have been disturbed, leaving the battered ATM at the scene. The digger has since been cleared from the garage at the crossroads of the A32 and the A272, but the building has been left badly damaged, with owner Ollie Lodge estimating tens of thousands of pounds worth of damage has been caused. Mr. Lodge said, "I've not been able to look at the CCTV yet. They didn't get what they wanted." The Budden store that is attached to garage was open for business yesterday, with the damage appearing to have been limited to an office. Mr. Lodge said, "We want to be open. We don't want to let them win twice. We're pretty vulnerable here. We have improved our security systems to try to match it. But when they've got a digger, there's not much you can do." A Hampshire Constabulary spokesman confirmed that they were called to the scene at around 3:30 a.m. yesterday to an attempted burglary. Officers are appealing for any witnesses to come forward. Anyone with information should call 101. quoting a very long reference number. The raid follows a similar incident in Bishop's Waltham earlier this year, in which a bungled raid resulted in rubble being left strewn across the street. In February, three men using a forklift truck smashed their way into the Lloyds Bank at around 3 a.m. The cash machine was removed, but abandoned on the pavement, surrounded by rubble and smashed glass. And there are four photographs, one of Ollie Lodge, who's not going to be beaten by this, one of the diggers still in situ with a great piles of rubble. I mean, it looks like they're trying to demolish a house. And then there's a more scene of the rubble and the cash machine lying in the midst of it all. And one again just of basically the slightly cleared up rubble and obviously the damage to the left-hand side of the shop, which is still continuing because I was only there yesterday.
Surprise guests at airport following historic flypast. Historic planes paid a surprise visit to Hampshire after taking part in a flypast in London to mark the centenary of the RAF. Three Spitfires and two Hurricanes were snapped by members of the Camera Club of the Hampshire Chronicle sister paper, Daily Echo, as they touched down at Southampton Airport, where the Spitfires made its first flight in the 1930s. The airport tweeted, "We've had an amazing surprise visit from Spitfires and Hurricanes from the flypast that took place in London earlier today. What a sight! Yesterday, thousands gathered outside Buckingham Palace to see the flypast of 100 aircraft. And there's beautiful pictures of the Spitfires and the Hurricanes in the air. And then there's one of them at the airport. Gosh, that must have been a surprise.
Guildhall joins straw campaign. Winchester Guildhall has joined a campaign calling on businesses to stop using plastic straws. Final Straw Winchester wants cafes, bars and restaurants to stop giving out single-use plastic straws and offer more environmentally friendly ones instead. The City Council-run Guildhall has pledged its support. The team is taking a further step to reduce plastic waste by looking to introduce reusable takeaway cups and water bottles for Cafe 1871 by the end of the summer. Councillor Steve Miller, who looks after the Guildhall as part of his portfolio, said plastic waste is a huge issue and we are determined to take action to address it.
And slightly along the same lines, Action Group's first litter pick. A Winchester Environmental Action Group were joined by city councillors for their first litter pick event. Plastic Free Winchester collected rubbish from Compton Lock and the surrounding areas. As well as plenty of volunteers, the event was also attended by councillors Brian Laming, Linda Murphy and Jan Warwick, who joined in to show their support for the new action group. 11 bags of rubbish were collected at the popular bathing spot, including a mountain of discarded plastic bottles, beer cans and crisp packets and several unmentionable items. This is the first of many events the group has planned over the summer, leading up to Green Week from October the 15th to the 21st. The group will also visit schools to highlight the problems that single-use plastic cause and are asking local children to design a campaign poster. More details about the competition can be found on Plastic Free Winchester Facebook page, and there's a photograph of the litter pickers with the great pile of black bin bags, which they've obviously collected, and they have those nice gripper things so they don't have to pick it up by hand. Anyway, well done them.
National Award for Winchester Choir founder Mari O'Brien. A Winchester choir leader has received a national award. Mari O'Brien, 61, has nurtured a choir from the three members to around 90. 7 years ago, she joined the Eastleigh Fusion Choir where she sang once a week. The leader of the choir was leaving and it was in danger of disbanding, until it was agreed that Mari should lead them instead. Now she has received a national recognition for being presented with the British Citizens Award. She thrived in the leadership role and decided to set up a second choir in her hometown of Winchester. So in 2013, the Winchester Fusion Choir was born with just three singers. Now it has over 90 singers. it was her vision that the new choir should be fun, embrace all, include all abilities, no auditions, no choreography and no previous knowledge needed. In 1998, Mari was involved in a road accident which completely changed her life. She sustained a broken neck and with a spinal cord injury, with talk of possible tetraplegia. But she made a complete recovery and gained an unwavering gratitude for life and has inspired her to create choirs unlike many other choirs. During her time with the choirs, they have been instrumental in raising £48,000 for charities. British Citizen Award patron Specsavers co-founder Dame Mary Perkins said, "Mari O'Brien has selflessly undertaken transforming lives through music, making a positive impact in her community with constant determination. She deserves the honour of a BCA medal and initials after her name." The BCAs were launched in January 2015 to recognise exceptional individuals who work tirelessly and selflessly to make positive impact on society. And there's a lovely picture of Mari with in the centre of the presenters. And she has that wonderful smile of her. Any of you who have met Mari will know she has the most wonderful smile. So well done her.
Top engineer killed in crash on the A31. Tributes have been paid to top engineer Stephen Rayner, killed in a crash near Winchester. He died in a collision on the eastbound A31 dual carriageway between Winchester and Alsford last Wednesday. Mr. Rayner, 53, of Northwood Park, Sparsholt, was a highly successful engineer who had risen to the top of his profession since graduating from Southampton University in 1988 with a degree in civil engineering. He worked in the Middle East, Malaysia and Hong Kong, and in 2012 was appointed director of Winchester Consulting Engineers Upton McGugan, 20 years after he had joined the firm as a graduate. In December 2016, he was appointed a director of WSP Consultants. The director of Ridge, which acquired Upton McGugan in 2014, said the whole team at Ridge were shocked and saddened to have Steve's untimely death. He was a very capable and experienced engineer with a broad international pedigree. Many of the buildings and complex structures that he worked on will bear testimony to his talents for many years to come. He was a much valued colleague. This is devastating news, and our thoughts are with his family. The fatal collision involved a Land Rover Discovery and Mr. Rayner's motorbike. He was pronounced dead at the scene near the junction with Rodfield Lane. Investigations into the exact circumstances are ongoing, and the police would like to speak to anyone who may have seen the incident or either vehicle prior to what happened at around 8:40 a.m. on Wednesday. His death was the third within 5 days on Hampshire roads, each of three involved a motorbike collision with a motor car. Andrew Mayer, age 61, died near Stockbridge on the 3420 on Saturday afternoon. The collision involved Mr. Mayer, who was riding a motorbike, and a blue Hyundai. The third collision happened on the A35 Lyndhurst Road outside the East Close Country House Hotel near Hinton at about 10:10 a.m. on Tuesday. In this case, the biker was a Bournemouth man in his 60s. In collision with a silver Honda Jazz on the A35 at around 10:10 a.m. He was thrown through the air, landing on the carriageway.
Campaigners' tree record bid stumped. Dozens of people backed a campaign against plans for thousands of new homes near ancient woodland and tried to break a world record. There were 150 people at Stoke Park Junior School in Bishopstoke in an attempt to break the record of 1,000 people dressed up as trees set in Mumbai, India. It was organised by members of Action Against Destructive Development, Eastleigh, ADD, in their battle against plans for 5,200 homes near ancient woodland between Bishopstoke and Fair Oak, south of Colden Common. Organisers said many people did not attend the event because of the England in the World Cup quarterfinals. But although the record of people dressed up as trees wasn't broken, campaigners said the event helped raise awareness. Organiser Charlotte Adcock said, "Unfortunately, we couldn't compete with the football, but it was a great day. We had an amazing tree-themed cake and people were delighted and really excited." The group has been campaigning against the plans, which are part of the Eastleigh local plan. Town bosses in Eastleigh backed the proposals for 5,200 homes between Bishopstoke and Fair Oak in December 2017, saying their choice was the most logical option. But campaigners did not agree and are concerned about the impact the new homes will have on the River Itchen, ancient woodland and pollution. And there are five photographs which I could generally say are green. Everybody's wearing a green T-shirt or a green top of some kind, and they have sort of crowns on their head with real leaves stuck into them, which is extremely effective. And there's many families who've turned up dressed as trees. Even a baby in a pushchair has got trees on a crown on his head. And there's Becky and Amelia Rogers, a mother and daughter, and the daughter's got her face painted green. And the Weber family, and I have to say, he gets the prize. His crown of leaves is probably 3 foot high, which is pretty effective. And various other members, all with their leaves and their greenness, and hoping to beat the Mumbai record.
Blaze sweeps through crops. Giant plumes of smoke rose over a Hampshire motorway as fire crews tackled a blaze which decimated acres of crops. More than 30 firefighters responded to more than 80 emergency calls following the blaze at Chapel Lane, Eastern, which broke out on farmland near the M3. Crews were called to the 60-acre field of standing crops and stubble, which had caught fire just after 1 p.m. on Tuesday. Motorists on the M3 were warned to be vigilant and watch out for the smoke, which had started to drift across the carriageway. A Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service spokesman said the field was well alight. Four pumps and two water carriers from Winchester, Eastleigh and service headquarters were called in, with four further Land Rovers and other support vehicles coming from Alsford, Basingstoke, Fareham, Andover and Lyndhurst. Firefighters battled the blaze for just under 2 hours, which sent enormous plumes of smoke into the atmosphere, visible for several miles. Social media exploded with dozens of images of the blaze shared on Facebook and Twitter from viewpoints around Winchester, and some pictures even showing the smoke looming over Winchester train station. Some passers-by blocked roads to clamber on top of cars near the site to post better pictures and videos of the fire. Residents also voiced their concern and appreciation for the fire service's swift action in putting the fire out. Twitter user Charlotte Coleman said, "What an amazing response by the fire brigade to a fire in the field in Eastern in Winchester. It was spreading so quickly and very worrying, but it got it under control." Fire crews eventually extinguished the fire at 3:07 p.m, with crews dampening down the scene and extinguishing the last few hotspots before handing control of the land back to the owner, and Chapel Lane was reopened to traffic. Despite the scale of the fire, no one was injured during the blaze. Its cause was unclear. At one point, internet rumours wrongly said the blaze was at Boomtown site near Cheesefoot Hill. And there's a picture of the fire and the smoke and a tractor at the beginning. It looks as though it spread quite a long way.
A dozen males found hiding in back of lorry. Eight men suspected of entering the country in a lorry illegally were arrested in East Lee. Emergency services were called to the brakes depot in Parham Drive on Tuesday morning after reports that 12 suspected illegal immigrants had been discovered in the back of a truck. Five police cars, an ambulance, two units from the South Central Ambulance Service's Hazardous Area Response, and the Immigration Enforcement Team rushed to the scene shortly after 10 a.m. The depot was cordoned off while officers searched a white, unmarked lorry. Several men wrapped in blankets were seen sitting on the ground next to the vehicle. A spokesman for the Home Office later confirmed that eight men who presented themselves as Iranian and Iraqi were arrested for immigration offences. He also said that four minors were referred to social services. He added, the Home Office will progress the cases in accordance with the immigration rules. Where someone is found to have no right to remain in the UK, we will take action to remove them. Immigration Enforcement was contacted by Hampshire Police on Tuesday after officers attending an incident in Parham Drive, Eastleigh. It was not revealed from where the lorry had come, but a spokesman for Breggs confirmed the vehicle was not owned by the company. A spokesman for the firm added, we can confirm that this was not a Breggs lorry, but was a supplier who was delivering to our depot. The load has been rejected and returned to the supplier, as this is not one of our lorries and is the subject of a police immigration inquiry. It would be inappropriate for us to comment further.
The pub where Nelson stayed, the Wickham Arms, Winchester. It's the award-winning Winchester pub that is home to a piece of the Berlin Wall. The Wickham Arms has been serving the public since 1755, when it was a coaching inn. Lord Nelson is even said to have stayed at the famous inn before making his way to Portsmouth. Some 263 years later, and the Wickham Arms is still going strong, having recently refurbished its accommodation, featuring both single and double rooms. The Wickham currently has been awarded two rosettes from the AA, an honour granted to less than 10% of hotels in the UK. The Wickham has also opened their new St George Tea Rooms in March, which serves lighter meals as well as traditional tea from 9 to 5. The tea rooms are also available for hire for evening functions. However, the heart of the Wickham Arms remains its friendly well-stocked bar featuring an extensive wine list, with 100 different bottles available, as well as 10 varieties of gin and 5 real ales on tap. John Howard has been the landlord of the pub since 2009, but the current unique look of the Wickham was created by its previous landlord, Graham Jameson, who made the pub what it is today. The Wickham Arms also recently crowned Town Pub of the Year by the Good Pub Guide for a fourth time, having previously won the prestigious accolade in 2016, 2013 and 2008. It was Jameson who started the pub's impressive collection of artefacts, which includes hundreds of tankards and a sceptre used at Winston Churchill's funeral, and even a piece of the Berlin Wall. He installed the slots in the tables that collect funds for the cathedral. A year after the slots had been installed, Mr. Jameson ordered for the collection boxes to be emptied and that he would match whatever they raised. Publicans had donated £30,000. True to his word, Mr. Jameson matched it. Mr. Howard said, it's full of character and characters. When I say I'm from Winchester, people always say, I know a really good pub in Winchester. I'm always worried they will say the Black Boy, but they always say the Wickham. And there's lovely photographs of the Wickham Arms on the corner of, I think, Cannon Street. And all the people who worked there, who were obviously extremely pleased with their awards.
An evening with British astronaut. A record-breaking British-born astronaut will be giving a talk as part of the celebrations to launch the new space zone at Winchester Science Centre and Planetarium. NASA astronaut Michael Foale, 61, the most experienced British-born astronaut in the history of human space flight, is presenting an exclusive live talk and question and answer about his career and life in space at the centre at Maughan Hill on Tuesday, July the 17th. An evening with Michael Foale is part of the Science Centre's celebration to highlight the official launch of Explorer Space, a brand new 600-metre interactive space zone that opens in time for the summer school holidays. Michael Foale, CBE, had a 26-year career at NASA, where he went on 6 space missions and logged more than 374 days in space, 11 hours and 19 minutes, including 4 spacewalks, totalling 22 hours and 44 minutes. Mr. Foale was born in Lincolnshire to a British father and an American mother, and after studying astrophysics at Cambridge, he left the UK to pursue his dream of going into orbit by joining NASA. This required him to become a US citizen. One of Mr. Foale's missions had him on board the Russian space station, Mir, when it was hit by a visiting cargo ship in 1997. He helped to re-establish the stricken Mir after it was degraded by the collision and depressurised. He went out and conducted a six-hour extraverticular activity, an EVA, with a Russian colleague to inspect the damage to the station's Spectre module. He is still the only NASA astronaut to fly extended missions on both Mir and the International Space Station. He was the first Briton to walk in space. "We're hugely excited to welcome Michael Fold to the Science Centre," said Ben Ward, chief executive of the Winchester Science Centre. "This is a rare opportunity to meet and pose questions to a British-born NASA astronaut who has had an incredible career. Michael's unique insight and experiences in space are sure to be fascinating and thought-provoking with regard to our place in the universe. It would be an unforgettable evening for any space enthusiast." In addition to the live presentation and the Q&A, there is an opportunity to take photographs with Michael Fole and to be one of the first to climb aboard Explorer Space before it opens to the public. The event also includes a 360-degree dome screening of the planetarium show Faster Than Light, narrated by Sean Bean. An evening with Michael Fole takes place on Tuesday, the 17th of July, in the planetarium at 7:15 p.m. For more information or tickets, visit the Winchester Science Museum website. And there's a lovely picture of Michael C. Fole.
Also involving the Science Centre, but on a terrestrial plane, Science Centre aims to educate on pollution, harm with exhibit, down to earth. A new exhibition has opened to promote the use of cleaner vehicles as the county attempts to tackle its clean air issue. Making a home at Winchester Science Centre, the Air Quality Exhibit aims to demonstrate how dirty air impacts on the health of the county's residents. It features a set of lungs which respond when visitors turn various dials to answer questions. The aim is to demonstrate how air quality impacts on health and the individual measures that can be taken to improve levels of air pollution. The installation was commissioned as part of the government's Access Fund for Hampshire County Council and Southampton City Council. It will be a permanent addition in the centre. The display, designed and created by model maker Clive Ramble, was launched by Councillor Rob Humby, the county's environmental chief, and City Councillor Eamon Kale. The launch was attended by pupils and teachers from Harefield Primary and Burselton Junior School, who have been working hard to encourage people to walk and cycle on the school run. Councillor Humby said, "Leaving the car at home when we can and travelling under our own steam not only improves health and fitness, but also helps reduce congestion and improve air quality. It's great to see young people encouraging others in their own communities to walk and cycle on the school run. And I hope the children from Harefield at Primary and Burselton Junior enjoy their visit to the Science Centre today to see the new exhibit and the difference they are making in improving air quality." The air exhibit opens as both councils look to tackle the air quality crisis. And there's a photograph of Rob Humby speaking to children at the new air quality exhibition. And there's a strap line on a card: "What are you breathing?"
And two short ones. Petrol thief is fined. A burglar, jailed for the theft of antique clocks, has been fined for stealing petrol and meat. Kevin McNeil, 46, of Alsford Road, Winchester, admitted driving off without paying for £20 worth of petrol on May the 20th and meat valued at £97.84 from Williams Garage in Otterbourne on April the 8th. He was fined £70, ordered to pay £60 in compensation with a £30 victim surcharge. Last month, he was jailed for 3 years for stealing clocks, valued at £100,000, from an antique shop in the square, Winchester. The court heard he had broken into Carter, Marsh & Co. in the square and was arrested on the premises. The items, which included an 18th-century barometer, were damaged in the raid, Winchester Crown Court heard. Rather a hopeless burglar. And then a new one, travel agents moving into former shoe shop. Following a 2-year search, property consultants London Clancy have secured alternative premises in Winchester for the tailor-made holiday experts travel bag. Travel Bag will be relocating from their existing High Street shop to the larger prime position former Schoon premises at 2324 High Street. Mark Clancy of London Clancy said, "We were delighted to have the opportunity to act for Travel Bag once more."
Goodwill Firm fundraising campaign. A Winchester law firm has more than 4,000 for charity this year after taking part in a will-writing campaign which asks for a voluntary donation rather than payment. Thomas Simpson, solicitors based in Southgate Street, took part in the annual will aid scheme and raised an impressive £4,315 in the month-long fundraiser, writing 37 wills. This is the fourth time they have taken part and were the second highest fundraising firm in Hampshire. Since they started taking part, they have raised over £11,000. Rob Simpson from the firm said, "Will aid is an excellent opportunity to spend some time giving back to the community. It is great to meet people who are particularly interested in charitable giving when writing their will. Having a properly written will removes a lot of stress for people you leave behind when you die. Our clients think the scheme is an excellent idea and they are delighted that the money is going to charity rather than paying a solicitor. Charities supported include ActionAid, British Red Cross, ChristianAid, NSPCC, Save the Children, Sight Savers and Age UK.
Women to be the focus of Heritage Open Days in 2018. In September, as part of the national celebrations of the centenary of the 1918 Representation of the People Act, which granted suffrage to women aged over 30, the Winchester Heritage Open Days team has organised more than 40 free events in and around the city. The events will be putting the spotlight on some of the national and community heroines whose history has been overlooked or forgotten, and extraordinary women will be honoured through talks, walks and exhibitions. The gathering of many of the speakers and event organisers at the Great Hall on Friday, June the 22nd, saw the launch of this year's festival programme. Heritage Open Days is one of the city's most popular festivals, running over 4 days from September the 13th to the 16th, offering free events for the whole community. This year will feature guided walks, wine and cider tastings, craft workshops, pop-up performances, living history, exhibitions, and much-loved behind-the-scenes visits to some of the city's historic buildings, many of which are not normally open to the public. Details of all the events can be found in the programme, which is available from Winchester's Tourist Information Centre. Highlights include a chance to see and hear about Winchester's very own Shakespeare First Folio at Winchester College, medieval knights at the Westgate, Anglo-Saxons and Vikings in the Cathedral Close, and the Sealed Not English Civil War reenactment group at Oram's Arbour. BBC Radio 4 Woman's Hour presenter Dame Jenny Murray, in conversation with the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of the Cathedral, about history of the world in 21 women. General Sir Anthony Walker leading a talk on "What Did You Do in the War, Mummy?" Two-time theatre's world premiere of Sir Walter's Women at the Great Hall, where Sir Walter Raleigh was tried and condemned to death, and Blue Apples, Fragments of Winchester at Pilgrim's Hall in Cathedral Close. Festival director Nikki Gottlieb said, "This year's Heritage Open Days Festival is bigger than anything we've put on so far. We've grown year on year, and the support from the local community is overwhelming. Last year, over 10,000 attended our events, and this year, with more than 100 free events, we hope many more will enjoy what's on offer. We are very grateful for the support of our lead sponsor, Winchester College, the City of Winchester Trust, our local councils, and many other businesses and volunteers who helped to make this happen." Winchester Heritage Open Days Festival team is led by local volunteers Nikki Gottlieb and Becky Brown, and hosted by the City of Winchester Trust.
Heatwave is the longest in 5 years. The recent heat wave experienced across Hampshire is the longest in the UK since 2013, according to the Met Office. But a cool front making its way south from Scotland will see temperatures drop to the low to mid-20s for much of England from Tuesday, Met Office meteorologist Becky Mitchell said. It will be particularly cool on the east coast, with temperatures forecast in the high teens to low 20s. After one of the driest Junes on record, there is a chance of some showers across England this week, Ms. Mitchell said. And added, temperatures are going to cool down a bit and we're going to see fresher conditions. It will still be very warm, less hot than recently, with the risk across the country for showers. A bit of rain could be quite welcome for some people, particularly across the south. For much of England and Wales, last month was one of the top five driest Junes on record. Some parts of south-east and central southern England saw just 6% of expected rainfall, according to the Met Office provisional figures. Water companies have urged people to use water sparingly.
A month of tasty Hampshire treats. Hampshire Food Festival, organised by Rownham's-based Hampshire Fair, is running through July. Now in its 18th year, this award-winning festival promises more than 60 tempting events for food lovers. Tracy Nash from the Hampshire Fair said, "The festival is a chance to meet the talented producers responsible for some of our country's top food and drink products. There is something for all ages, tastes and budgets, so have a look at the Hampshire Fair website and plan your July around the flavours of our fabulous country." Events include cookery masterclasses, vineyard, distillery and brewery tours, pop-up dinners, festival menus, markets, tasting events and farm visits. Southampton's first cocktail week, July the 16th to the 22nd, at various venues around the city. The Curdridge Show on July the 14th and the Vineyards Hampshire Wine Festival on July the 22nd, which this year is hosted by Rames Vineyard at Titchbourne near Alresford, are among the other events coming under the Food Festival umbrella. The festival is sponsored by the county's own mineral water firm, Hilden, based at Broughton. And there's a picture of a lady selling her wares at a rather rustic table.
Dads get on their bikes to help raise classroom funds. Two Winchester fathers have cycled hundreds of miles to raise money for a new classroom. Jim Blackburn and Darren Collins, both parents of St Bede Primary Schools, teamed up to take on 370 miles over 5 days. Their ride began at St Bede Museum in Jarrow near Newcastle and ended its style with the whole school greeting the cyclists as they returned to the school on Monday morning. A special escort was provided during the final stage by some of the Year 6 pupils and head teacher Mrs. Duck. The bike ride is part of a new project raising funds for a new eco classroom, which the school intends to use for wraparound care as a community space and as an extra teaching and learning resource. Mrs. Duck said, "We're very grateful for the fundraising efforts of Darren and Jim and also support from the whole school community. We are delighted to be part of a project that helps to promote physical activity, acknowledges the historical foundations of our school, and raises funds for the school in a creative and unifying manner." And there's a photograph of Jim Blackburn and Darren Collins with some of the school children and all their bicycles.
New £80 fines for drivers littering cars in the New Forest. Motorists could be fined £80 if their passengers throw litter from the vehicle in the New Forest. New enforcement powers are being adopted by the New Forest District Council, NFDC. The authority's cabinet unanimously agreed to adopt the new littering from vehicles powers, which give NFDC the ability to impose a civil penalty notice on a registered keeper of a vehicle if their passengers throw litter from the vehicle. Portfolio holder for the environment, Councillor Alison Hoare, said, "Most people respect the environment and take their litter home, but there are sadly a few that do not. I cannot understand why anyone would throw waste from their vehicle, considering the damage it causes to our wildlife. I wish we could do that everywhere."
Yes.
Past winner shares award secrets. Business leaders from across the region heard firsthand about the numerous benefits a Queen's Award can bring from those who have already been successful at a dinner hosted by the BDOLLP, and Santander. The, a Queen's Award for Enterprise is one of the most prestigious awards a UK company can win, and around 200 of those accolades are given out by the Queen each year. They were joined by the senior management team from Central South Mid Market Company of the Year, BOFA International, who hold Queen's Awards for both international trade and innovation. They shared their key advice for preparing a submission, which includes having a clear strategy for which category to enter, allowing plenty of time for research, interviewing colleagues, reviewing and amends, gathering financial data and getting clarity on certain points if needed, being methodical and assigning the right tasks to the right people, reflecting on what they might be looking for, rather than just telling the story you want to tell and getting someone who can write it to prepare the submission. Managing Director Tony Lockwood said, "The Queen's Awards definitely carry weight and give us additional credibility internationally. They are a great conversation topic when we say we produce award-winning technology. Our staff are hugely proud of the awards when they talk to customers and prospects, and it has created a significant feel-good factor within the company." Malcolm Thixton, lead partner at BDO in Southampton, added, "It was a great opportunity for BOFA and other current award holders such as Captech to demystify the processes and tell others about the real benefits that can be gained." Deputy Lieutenant for Hampshire, Andrew Kent, who led the discussion at the event, added, "I'm really hopeful that some of the companies attending will now seriously consider applying for an award. It's always useful to hear about a company's own experiences of winning an award and what difference it has made to their businesses."
The next item involves a school in Kingsworthy, Princes Mead School, and the retirement of their head, the way they've celebrated the retirement of their head teacher. Forget the Rolling Stones, a real legend headlined a Winchester School's tribute concert to its retiring headmistress, Penelope Kirk. Mythical beast Sparkle, the unicorn, got star billing at the fairy tale send-off for Princes Mead School's outgoing head, which included entertainment from Steel Pan Drummers, local band The Wanderers, school gymnasts and choirs, and welly-wanging competition. But while this so-called Kirkfest, revellers had to suspend their imagination over Sparkle's suspicious Shetland-like ancestry, there was no mistaking the magical figure of more than £3,000 raised for Miss Kirk's chosen charities, the Winchester Hospice, the Murray Parish Trust, and the Timothy Pruss School in Tamil Nadu in India. Charitable partnerships have been at the very heart of her work at Princes Mead. Under her stewardship, the school community has supported their sister school in India since 2005, funding vital resources and for the past 6 years paying the salaries of some of its infant and junior school teachers. After 16 years at the helm of the Kingsworthy School, Miss Kirk is retiring from a 38-year teaching career, having devoted her life to making education a fun and joyous journey. Her vibrant personality, wit and flair for inspiring a love of learning has set many generations of children off on a lifelong path of discovery. And her common sense advice and unwavering support will be treasured by the many staff and parents who've had the privilege of being able to call her their friend. Miss Kirk said, "The joy of teaching is knowing that you make a difference to the life of a young person. I have nothing but profound gratitude for the opportunities I have been granted at Princes Mead, for the lasting friendships I have made, and for the privilege of watching the children blossom and prepare for their future." What a tribute to the educational profession. And there are delightful photographs of Year 4 children having fun with photo booth props. There's a Year 2 pupil, Flo Smith, with Sparkle, the Shetland pony, and then retiring headmistress Penelope Kirk, photographed beautifully with somebody called Sarah Parrish.
Best foot forward for Finn. A group of scout leaders have put their best foot forward to help one of their members. Over the weekend, five leaders from the 8th Winchester Scout Troop hiked 55 miles over 2 days in aid of 13-year-old Finn Ailes, who has spinal muscular atrophy. The group trekked from Southmoor near Oxford to Winchester with the aim of raising funds to replace his wheelchair, which is reaching the end of its life as he cannot walk. David Ashbury leader, Dominic McTominini, and Dillian Evans, assistant leaders, James Locke and Louis Howe all took part in the fundraiser. Despite the intense heat, they covered 30 miles on the first day. Some of the group had previously taken part in the famous Sir Durance event, Tour de Triggs, but the youngest member of the team, Louis, at just 16, said this latest hike felt much tougher due to the heat. The leaders were fully supported by David's parents, Caroline and Ian Ashby, who thanked the leaders for their support. So far, more than 5,000 has been raised towards the 16,000 goal. I feel this is worth supporting. Visit www.gofundme.com/finsfund2018-2018. I won't repeat that because you can always rewind for that one.
Thank you. And that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norman York.
Goodbye.
And Paul Newman.
Farewell.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, not forgetting to place the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.